You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Here we are on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It is Fantasy Sports Today, and thanks for joining us. Like upbeat music, getting it going.
We're ready to rock, Mike.
Yeah, we're kind of fired up. I'm kind of fired up, because here's the deal.
Tell me the deal.
You may not know this, sports fans, and Kevin Walsh. This is my co-host, Kevin Walsh. I have yet to introduce him, but that's all right.
That's
a free-flowing show.
People should know who I am. Come on.
So, February is often a slow sports month, but I feel like this Saturday, maybe it's because I have Olympic fever, maybe it's for a variety of other reasons, but there's actually a lot of sports news on the docket. We do have the Olympics. Yep. We have some action with the NFL with the combine coming up later this week. We have a big trade which is being announced. It's sources reporting, but it looks like this thing's going to happen. We had some big MLB signings, not to mention that we have spring training games. So there's actually a lot on the slate for late February.
Yeah, there's actually a whole bunch of stuff going on. I don't know how the Chiefs apparently want all of their offseason moves done before the offseason even begins. It's an interesting strategy.
Yeah, look, I think anytime you have a young corner that's as talented as he is, that's on the cheap, you're crazy to trade him. But obviously, he's created an untenable scenario. We know about him having issues in college. He was removed from the University of Washington team his final year there. He was able to get past those negative stories about him and became a first-round pick by the Chiefs. He has the most interceptions in the league since he entered it, as well as the most passes defended. Part of that is because people pick on younger corners, but he has shown himself worthy of taking that attention and taking the ball away, by the way.
Yeah.
But we've seen incidents with him in the past. They had to suspend him a game because he left the field. I think he thought he was kicked out of that game, but he left the field without being told that he was kicked out. So it has become an untenable scenario for them. Obviously, they're going to get something back, but it's really difficult to get that kind of value back in a trade.
Yeah, I wonder how much the Smith trade played into this with them getting Fuller back and everybody saying such positive things. But normally, I know people were kind of saying that Fuller was best suited in the slot. Maybe they really wanted to get a first-round pick back because a lot of people are assuming that at the minimum they'll be receiving a first-round pick with this trade. I think that Marcus Peters is a lot better than I don't know, most people. I think he's certainly a top five corner. So to give up a top five corner on, as you mentioned, what is a really favorable contract, I don't love the idea of that, but I guess we have to see what they get back. And if Fuller's going to be able to, you know, be able to transition to the outside, then it's not as bad. And the best part is this is far from the only thing going on. I didn't even think about it that way, but as you said it right there, like there's really a ton of stuff happening right now in sports, and normally this is it's a dead period, but that's why we're here, to help the people.
Yeah, like after the Super Bowl ends, you're like, look, I'm not complaining about what it is that we do on air, but there's a time where you're like, man, what are we going to do now? The football is over. The Olympics helps me because I'm excited about it.
Right.
And I would preface later in the show, in fact, in the next segment, I did an interview with an Olympian. Her name's Colleen Coyne. She won the gold medal in Nagano in 1998. She's a friend of mine. We decided to do this interview. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll play it over the course of two segments. It runs about 20 minutes, and you'll get a chance to hear Kevin as well as everybody else. So a cool thing that I was able to do with her, somebody I've known for over 20 years. So that's a little tidbit. What were you going to say?
I was just going to, was it pre them winning or it came after the interview?
No, so I've known her for 20 years.
I mean, not her winning. I mean,
I know. I get it. I did it last Friday and we edited it and aired it on Wednesday before the women won. So I didn't get post-game reaction, but she talked a little bit about going into the game, and you know, she thought they had a real shot to win and all that kind of stuff. So that was obviously a very exciting. So that was one thing I wanted to ask you about. We'll talk a little bit more about it in the next segment, but the women's hockey winning the gold medal was obviously a big highlight this week.
Absolutely. It was. I don't know if you stayed up to watch it live, but in that moment, I said this to Pete when I walked in.
I fell asleep in the second period.
Oh, my goodness. It was, in that moment, hockey was the greatest sport in the whole world to me. It was so fun. The first of all, do you have an opinion on the shootout stuff? And I'm interested what Pete thinks on this as well, because a lot of people are very upset with the idea of, especially a gold medal game, ending in a shootout. I don't know, for me, I don't mind it. I enjoy the shootouts, but I also don't enjoy the back and forth hockey as much, so perhaps that's why I like basketball a lot. I like scoring, so maybe that's what it is. But I didn't mind it. I don't know how that landed for you.
We'll bring Pete in at the beginning of the next segment to get his thoughts on it, because he's a kind of a pure hockey fan and he plays hockey. So I'd like to get his thoughts on it. We'll do it in the next segment. It's a fair question. I don't typically like shootouts, but look, I watch international soccer, and it just gets to the point where you're really going to have these guys skating around and or running around in soccer forever? They're just exhausted. Let's get to it. Let's get some finality. And the hockey quality and the soccer quality and even the basketball quality. I think back to that 6-overtime UConn-Syracuse game at Madison Square Garden a bunch of years ago. Mm-hmm. And people talk about what a great game. I watched that entire game. It was awful. After the first overtime, it was terrible basketball. They're exhausted.
Right.
They're playing tooth and nail for, at that point, it was 45 minutes. They were exhausted. Yeah. Players are missing layups. It's done. I don't suggest that you do a free throw contest, because it's too, there's a lot of variables in basketball that you can eventually get to it. That is a huge anomaly that it would go to 6 overtimes. Mm-hmm. But I'm okay with it. Of course, Hockey Guy on Twitter was up in arms over the shootout, A, and B, over her not skating forward a couple of times during the penalty shot. Lamoureux not skating forward during the penalty shot, said it shouldn't have counted. But, you know, Hockey Guy on Twitter,
shot.
Sorry, it's over.
You try to say that, like, that 6-overtime game ruined Johnny Flynn, and that's why he busted? And I felt like that was a take that came out of that. Like, after that game, it was someone from that game. I think it was a prospect. I think it was him.
And Johnny Flynn was definitely in that game.
Yeah, I know he was in the game, but I'm trying to think if it was him, or maybe it was, because the beat was on, it was still at UConn at that point, correct?
That's a good question. I don't know if Tabeat was in that game. I remember Eric Dieverdorf and Johnny Flynn. Guys were missing layups. It was awful. It was an awful game. You can look it up. But in any, it was exciting, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't great basketball in the last 4 overtimes. It was, you know, guys were too tired. So that's my point. I know I made a different sport example, but I'm okay with the shootout, I think. You could probably sway me. If Pete has a compelling argument in the next segment, he could probably sway me. But anyway, so that was a good highlight.
Good game from Tabeat.
That was a good
19-14, 6 blocks. 7 of 10.
Yeah, that one game didn't ruin him.
Oh, my goodness.
They played forever,
Johnny
Kevin.
Flynn,
the stats are obviously
Johnny
huge.
Johnny Flynn played 67 minutes. Oh, my gosh. Oh,
that's my point.
God. 16 from the line. How about that,
who's
Mr. Flynn?
Who's going to be... Yeah, he really worked out, too. Nice job by the T-Wolves drafting Rubio and Flynn.
That's the worst
back-to-back.
Thing.
And smart.
Not Curry.
Not Curry. Not many other guys that they could have taken. But so that was a good highlight. We had the men's curling won gold. We'll get into that in the next segment as well. And then also we have MLB. Some big signings finally broke through this week. J.D. Martinez, Eric Hosmer.
Yeah, that was huge. The Hosmer one was, to me, pretty surprising. Because I know that we've had where JD was linked. I know there was some stuff for Hosmer, but it kind of broke randomly at night. I guess maybe because it was LA time, wasn't as late over there. But that kind of caught me off guard. Were you more surprised by one than the other? Was it what you were anticipating?
I think that I was anticipating those. You're talking about Martinez and Hosmer? Anticipating those signings? Yeah, I think I expected that. The Boston thing seemed to be breaking down at one point, but when you step back from it, nobody else was offering that much money. and there didn't seem to be any other teams that were in the mix, right? Like, for him, what was he going to do? And what were the Sox just going to say, fine, we're done with you, despite the fact that we need a power hitter?
Yeah. The Martinez one, I definitely think that it eventually was going to get figured out between Arizona or Boston. Hosmer, I didn't know what his situation was going to be. I'm surprised the market on him wasn't bigger. Like, I don't know.
He got a ton of money.
Yeah, but
what's the problem?
I just thought that there would perhaps be maybe more teams like him landing in San Diego. Like, why wouldn't? I mean, I guess maybe it has to do with the Mets more. But wouldn't him landing in New York maybe have made some sense?
It does make sense, but you know why it didn't happen?
Because they're the Mets.
That's right.
That's
the answer.
That's
they
fair.
Are the Mets. He should be on the Mets.
Like that.
If they had any inkling of spending money, then yeah, he'd be there. Instead, they got Jay Bruce for a song, in my opinion, and now they're going to piece it together with all the other stuff and cross their fingers and hope the pitching stays healthy, which won't happen. I do like the Jason Vargas signing for them, by the way, because that happened like exactly a week ago, so we didn't talk about it too much last week. But in any event, I like it just because they're going to need pitching depth, and I know he's 35 years old and he'll never pitch like he did last year again. That's fine. If he's an innings eater on some level, I think that's okay. I remember a year ago going into the season, we talked about the seven Mets pitchers that they had and be like, they have too many. They should deal Lugo or Mats. And I was thinking, why not just keep these guys around? Somebody's going to get hurt. And it turns out, like, five of them got hurt.
Apparently, all got hurt. So then it was like, no, we should have traded them because now we... I used to get into arguments a while with a buddy of mine talking about...
Who is your baseball team, by the way?
I mean, I cheer for the Yanks. You?
Okay. Same.
Yeah. I had an argument whether would you want kind of like the best staff in the league or the best lineup, like long term. And he would always say, pitching wins in the playoffs. I'm like, yeah, but you just can't trust it because pitchers get hurt. And it was that season where the Red Sox had their lineup, they were just by far the best offense, and then all of the Mets got hurt, and I was like, this is why you can't have that rotation. The Mets are to hone in on the Mets, they are an incredibly difficult team, I think, to predict because there is talent there, and their rotation does have the potential to be top three, if not better. But it's very hard to, I think, lean on that type of or the lack thereof with the stability for that team. Mickey Galloway, everyone seems to be so convinced that he's going to have the secret potion to keep all these guys healthy. I feel like that's just optimism, but. I mean, I wish well things for the Mets. It's just really hard to come into a year where, you know, you're still putting all your chips on a rotation that never stays healthy.
I agree with you. Now, the irony of that is if they did stay healthy, they would have a chance to challenge in the playoffs. Like, they could
for
beat
sure.
anybody.
I totally, yeah.
And I do think they should really consider signing somebody like Greg Holland, who's waiting on bigger money than what he's being offered, and like bolster the bullpen. Mm-hmm. But I think they've shown that they're not really willing to do that. I don't expect them to stay healthy just based on past history.
No.
Obviously, we can't. It's an unpredictable thing. You're right. It is a hard thing to predict because the variables for the Mets are elite pitching versus. A bunch of backup pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
I know every staff has that kind of concern, but not with the upside that the Mets have, if that makes sense. So I do think they're difficult to predict because if they stayed healthy, they could win over 90 games
especially,
and be a threat in the playoffs.
Especially within the NL East, the Marlins – should be the worst team in baseball. The Phillies and Braves have made moves, but I mean, the Mets should, if they're healthy, not even if they're healthy, if they're not as hurt as last year, they should be the second in that division. I feel no problem. No.
Yeah, I'd say so. If they're healthy, that's it. They're the second best team. They should beat out the Braves and the Marlins and the Phillies. That's not that difficult. The Braves are on the upswing, but they wouldn't be better than the Mets if the Mets were healthy. No way.
That's what I wonder if they can turn that into the like a wild card. I still feel like they're comfortably behind the Nationals, but if they're able to pick on those three teams, because you, I mean, you play your division so much in baseball, with that, obviously there being 162 games, like if you can just pick on those three teams below you, then maybe you turn that into 90 wins, and that, you know, maybe you're not as good as I don't know, a Giants team, but the NL West seems to be, you know, comfortably deeper.
Giants have made a lot of signings, so they've kind of transformed themselves a little bit this offseason, trades and signings and that kind of stuff. So they're an interesting team, kind of going all in with remaking the team. They obviously bottomed out last year, but we'll see. The last thing I'd say on Hosmer before we get to a break is that it is surprising, I guess, that the Royals and the Padres were the teams, right? But we see in the first base market, there's not a lot of teams that are going to go out and spend at that position. There's usually a fair amount of depth at first base. As you look across the league, most teams are pretty set at the position. But, yeah, look, people could have upgraded, but do you want to upgrade to the tune of $140 million? Yeah. Probably not. So we'll talk MLB in the third hour today. We're going to go over some under-the-radar pitchers. We're going to talk about the labor draft that Jake Seeley at All In Kid was involved in, sort of review his draft. We've got Rich Cirminello in the second hour. He's a college football expert. We'll talk to him about the upcoming combine.
Emphasis on the expert.
College draft prospects.
Rich is phenomenal.
He's absolute. He is phenomenal. He knows as much about college football as anybody I know personally. We're going to talk a little bit about the Olympics in the next segment. We'll do a little bit of NBA at the end of this hour because we got Kawhi Leonard drama.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Last night, unfortunately, Jimmy Butler got hurt. It seems that he may have avoided the worst with an ACL tear, but he will be on the shelf, it seems, for some time. Who knows how much? Could it be the rest of the regular season? Could it be a few days? Not really sure. So it's me and Kevin Walsh here for the next 3 hours. Come back and join us, and we're going to talk Olympics. You'll hear an interview with me and Colleen Coyne after the break as well. We're here for 3 hours on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Come back after this.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. If you want to give us a call today, please do so at 844-843-6879. It's 84FNTSY. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett, and Kevin is at the Kevin Walsh. And speaking of calls and speaking of Twitter, you can find this guy on every day on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network at the Tony Cincotta on Twitter. And he's calling us because we sparked a little bit of a, I don't know, talking point for Tony. He's going to be on a little bit later today on Weekend Fantasy Update with Joe Galina. But he has something to say about Marcus Peters. So, Tony, we talked about how kind of crazy it seems that they would trade him. But what do you think about this?
I you know what? The whole Marcus Peters situation made no sense to me. So I did a little research because – you know, Mike, when you're a top cornerback in the league, no one gets that many interceptions because no one throws against you, right?
Yeah.
So I'm saying, what is the deal with Marcus Peters? He's overrated big time. In the last two seasons, right, he has all those interceptions, but 60% of the passes thrown to his guy were completed. You know, that's not an elite cornerback. He's got an amazing contract. He only gets paid $1.8 million this year. In a team option next year. I'm really interested to see with the analytics now in football and all the stats out there. I think Marcus Peters was exposed by the Kansas City organization. They said, we got to get rid of him while we still can get something.
That's interesting. So I take that for so we'll take that as truth, as he does give up a lot of passes. I think you're right. I think guys only get picked on if they think that they can be picked on, right? Anytime we see a backup corner come in, Tom Brady, anytime he sees a backup corner comes in, he picks on the guy until they take him off the field, basically, or until he intercepts him, which never happens. But even if Peters is overrated, he's still on that good contract. He's not a bottom half of the league corner to take it to an extreme.
Number 16 in the last two seasons rated by Pro Football Focus.
So your theory would be that he's overrated. While they would concede he's a good corner, he's too much of a headache, and they need to get something now.
Yep. I think they cashed in. They said, we got a $1.8 million set, which is great. So I want to see if it's a first-round pick. I think it's 50-50.
I think it's going to have to be a first-round pick with just the way them not having a first-round pick. Normally, teams that can make this kind of move is because they want to be able to get into the first round of the draft. I've heard you say this before, Tony, and I understand the logic because the most shutdown guys won't get thrown at. But Peters has been doing this back even when he was at Washington before he got kicked off the team. He has incredible ball skills, so he does make the most of those opportunities.
He's allowing 60% of the passes, 6 out of 10. That's not good.
When you still
and what is it, Tony? I mean, what does the elite corner give up there? Like, what is the number that you
low
would pick?
50, low 50s.
Yeah.
I think he
makes the big plays.
Yeah, and here's the thing with the Rams too: they don't have a second round pick. So for the Chiefs to make this move now, you would think they're getting a first, Tony,
or a player in return.
Ah, man, that would be tough. There's only four places that when you listen to GMs. Which I know, Tony, you have issues with like traditional GMs. There's only four places you want to spend money: QB, offensive tackle, pass rusher, shutdown corner. And if Peters isn't the guy that they consider a shutdown corner that they're going to give a bunch of money to, I guess you get out now while the getting is good. And if the Rams don't see what we're talking about, then they can steal a first round pick.
You know how it is in sports nowadays. There's a bunch of people that are in a front office that look at the analytics, wouldn't know Marcus Peters would be walking down the hallway, and they look at those numbers, and it's alarming.
Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes that's a good perspective to have. It's good to have both sides of the perspective, but if the analytics guys don't care who Marcus Peters is and they can tell you he's not as effective as other guys, then they can get a first-round pick and maybe upgrade at a different position. Now, keep in mind, they just traded for Fuller. They just signed David Amerson, who isn't very good. But nonetheless, they don't have a complete hole at the position. Then maybe they get out now. So, interesting. I like that take, Tony. It's important to have information like that. So, thank you for calling.
Analytics guys, you end up with the Baltimore Orioles. So there you go.
Not always good. And Buck Showalter, manager that nobody seems to like.
Take care. I'm listening to the show, so don't suck. You start out really good at 20 minutes. Keep your composure and
I will.
Be a long distance.
Thank you, coach.
Show host today.
I'll be like the men's curling team. I'll steal my resolve for the next two hours and 30 minutes.
Big and curling.
All right, Tony. Tony will be on later today with Joe Galina on the Weekend Fantasy Update. Listen to him there. Thanks, Tony. Talk to you soon. So there we go. Wanted to set up one thing real quick. We talked a little bit about setting up the Olympics interview that I had with Colleen Coyne. So I'm going to throw it over to this interview for a minute. You'll listen to like the last 10 minutes or so of it. I'll come back and I'll intro the second half of it in the next break. And then we can talk about the Olympics, Lindsey Vonn, the women's hockey team, and men's curling after this. So here's my interview with 1998 Olympic gold medalist Colleen Coyne. Welcome to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm Mike Blewett. We're excited to bring to you today a unique piece of content. Typically, we're talking about some of the major sports across the fantasy landscape, but we wanted to make sure that we joined in the Olympic revelry at this time of year, once every couple of years. And I'm happy to bring to you today a person that I've known for a number of years and was very successful in her own right in the Olympics, Colleen Coyne. She's an Olympic gold medalist from the 1998 Nagano Olympics. She played ice hockey, a defenseman in women's ice hockey, and you and I have known each other for a long time. We've traveled separate paths in order to get here, but I'm excited to interview you today, especially during this time of year. I'm sure you get Olympic fever when this stuff comes about.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's you start hearing from friends, family. There happens to be a woman on this year's team who has a last name Coin, so I've gotten messages from lots of people who are asking me if there's any connection there to us. So, you know, I was a huge fan of the Olympics before I was ever an Olympian, so I just kind of reverted now back to fan.
That's great. So, you know, it is that, obviously you're going to get that feeling. It's interesting that there's somebody that is same namesake as you, but ultimately, you have to feel like, well, you and I were working together at a job which we left behind many years ago. It was interesting to hear the updates from you about what was going on and what you were trying to accomplish. And it's so abstract for me at the time to realize that you ultimately did make the Olympic team and ultimately did go to Nagano. So what was the lead up like for you in trying to make that team?
Yeah, so it's much different now in a lot of ways than it was back then. But for me, you know, the process with the national team started back in 1990, really, for me, when the first women's world championships were being planned and the teams were being selected. So I had tried out for that team. I was young, like 18 years old, I guess, and didn't make it that year. And then ultimately made the team in 1992. And then it's just sort of a process of maintaining your position there. So, you know, keeping up with the competition, trying to get better every year and hanging on to that roster spot for as long as you can. So, you know, specifically in that year leading up to the Olympics, the couple years that I was training at BU and working in Boston with you, it was an interesting process. It's not like it is now. They have a lot more time together now than we did. It was sort of done in these like 2 week chunks. And then ultimately there was a larger camp in the summer where the selections came down to, they narrowed it down to, I think, 25 at that time in August of 1997. And there were a series of games, international competition friendlies, as they say. Yeah. Throughout that process, you know, we were being evaluated and you know, it was the Winter Olympics is tough. I mean, there's probably no really great time to have that type of stress on you, but you know, unfortunately, you know, as a team was getting narrowed down to a roster of 20, which we had, now I think they have 23. It was like Thanksgiving time, yeah. Christmas time, you know, so it was really
you're trying to enjoy yourself with your family, but you're thinking about making the team.
Exactly. So the final selections were made up in Lake Placid in December of 1997. And, you know, that's when I found out I was named to that team. So.
And that was the first year that 98 was the first year that women's ice hockey was introduced to the Olympics. So there was probably somewhat of an added pressure in trying to be the first team and represent well.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. You know, there's probably blessings and curses in there somewhere. But, you know, we were all rookies, every player on every team. So, you know, we all were under the same, you know, it was an entirely new experience. We didn't really have anyone to look to say, you know, how do we handle this situation? We just kind of had to figure it out. And, you know, we had a great staff, lots of support staff as well, sports psychologists and things like that kind of had been there before in the Olympics and could prepare us for some of the things that might happen. So we, you know, we had a ton of training in that sense and we're mentally focused and mentally strong and mentally prepared to, you know, to take on that that huge event.
Yeah. So ultimately you get there. So you get to Nagano and they're ready to watch ice hockey for the first time. It's fans that probably aren't typically watching a lot of hockey. But you and I talked before this and you said that the opening ceremonies were kind of mind blowing. So what was that experience like? When you first get there, you're in the opening ceremonies and experiencing it as an Olympian.
Yeah, I mean, I think any athlete that you talk to that has been lucky enough to experience opening ceremonies would agree. I mean, my own personal take, I think, is that that's the moment that it kind of hits you. That and processing. So when we land in Nagano, or actually in Japan, there's a processing, right? So that's when they hand out all the fun stuff. You get like the shirts and all the swag with the rings on it. And, you know, it starts to become real at that moment. But you're still sort of your own little group of 20 and your coaches and your staff. And we've been together for a long time and we were sort of comfortable. But walking into that stadium surrounded by other athletes from the U.S. and, of course, around the world, but particularly, you know, that U.S. contingent, It's just a super powerful experience. It just shows you that there are people all over the world that think like we do, that have the same goals as we have. You know, there's just so much in common versus, you know, what we tend to focus on outside of that time period is, you know, where the differences are. So it's a very powerful moment. At least it was for me.
And I would imagine you get a similar feeling when you watch opening and closing ceremonies now, seeing all the athletes walk in together and everybody seems to be having a good time and not focusing on their differences.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, now it's a whole different experience from a viewing too, because I'm actually looking for people like that I've met or that I know yeah. to see, you know, see them watching. So from that perspective, it's different too. But yeah, you kind of get a sense, like, especially for the first time Olympians, which is what we were, you know, what that feeling is like.
So you're walking through the opening ceremonies. You're walking through the Olympic Village. You told me before in our previous call that it was the NHLer's first time there. So not only was it your first time there, but Wayne Gretzky is there. Ray Bourque is there. Peekaboo Street, I think, was a pretty big, famous athlete at the time. So you're amongst these people as well as your teammates.
Yeah, and from a hockey perspective, like, you know, we knew who the hockey players were for sure. Mm-hmm. And then there were some people that just, you know, became known figures from those games that we got to meet and hang around with.
Like who?
And at least to the rest of the world, you know, sure. Every athlete there is known within their own sport. But outside of their own sport, you know, we had some great. Eric Burgess was a freestyle skier and the gold medalist, and Nikki Stone. I mean, we did very well that year as well. So we walked out of there with a lot more celebrities than we walked in with.
So the Olympic, so everybody knows about the Olympic Village experience and how it can be kind of a party and all that kind of stuff. But for your sport, you are really playing throughout the entirety of the Olympics. So people may get to party a little bit more than you, but I'm sure, you know, you saw how sort of collegial it was. I was watching an interview recently with Tara Lipinski and Sean White and a couple of others. And some of those athletes, unlike yourself, you played at UNH, some of those athletes never get a chance to go to college and have that experience. So it's their first time experiencing that. You know, whether it's a freestyle skier or a figure skater, they don't typically have maybe a normal college experience because they're training all throughout it. But that had to be fun for you to see that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And to your point, we were playing a lot more. I think our final game was just a few days before closing ceremonies. So, you know, we weren't as much fun yeah. as some of the other athletes maybe. But, you know, and then afterwards, it's interesting because we do play a team sport as well. And it was a pretty special moment. So, you know, I think that we were very focused on sharing that moment with each other and with our own families.
Right.
So we definitely had a good time. Anyone who watched got a chance to watch Letterman that night would know that we had a good time. That was an interesting, fun experience. So it is. It's just it's very – everybody's happy to be at the Olympics. Like, there's no question.
That's great.
Well, good stuff. So that was the first half of the interview with Colleen Coyne, my friend. I know we went quick to it, but I worked with her like 20 years ago. And as we were working together at this job, she told me that she was training for the Olympics. She played hockey at UNH, and it was something she was training for. And as I was working with her, Kevin, she made the Olympic team and was like, I'm going to Japan. And it was so abstract and surreal at the time. And then she wins the gold. It was crazy. And she eventually came back to work for us kind of part-time.
She came back?
She moved on. Yeah, she came back to like work for us. Like, you have to understand, like, when you're training for something like that, you can't have – she could have a part-time job where we were working. So it helped her as she was doing it. But in any event, I stayed in touch with her over social media, and here we are, and we did this interview. So we'll play the second half of it after the break. Some other cool stories from her on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So we'll come back after this. You'll hear the rest of that interview, and then we'll bring in Pete Considore. We'll talk shootouts. So join us after the break to listen to the interview.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the program in there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
We're back in the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Like I said before the break, we're going to continue the interview with Colleen Coyne in a moment. But first, I want to tell you that Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. There's flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single-entry contests only. Fantasy Factor runs NHL and NBA free rolls every week. It's free entry. Simply sign up and enter www.fantasyfactor.com. So I'm going to continue the last 10 minutes or so of this interview with Colleen Coyne. We'll come back. We'll bring Pete Considore, our producer, in. Mr. Hockey, captain of his hockey team. We'll talk about the shootout and whether or not he's a
Captain Considore.
Curmudgeon. Yeah, whether he's like a curmudgeon hockey guy and he doesn't like shootouts. We'll find out after we talk to my friend Colleen Coyne, 1998 Olympic gold medalist. Here's the interview.
So we're here with Colleen Coyne, 1998 Olympic gold medalist in women's ice hockey. She was a defenseman. So a little bit about the games themselves. You told me that in the run-up to this, you had not really had a chance to knock off Canada. Canada was kind of dominating you in run-up tournaments and world championships and the like. But something happened during the round-robin match against Canada that sparked you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, looking back, it probably started just before that. But, you know, we had these friendly games, 13 of them leading up to the Olympics. And we had split 7-6, I think, at that time. Or maybe, it was close. I can't remember. And for the first time, we had a international tournament held in Lake Placid in December. It was right after that tournament that selections were made, final selections. And in that tournament, we actually beat Canada, for the first time in any sort of championship game. You know, we had played them, beat them in these friendlies here and there, but anytime there was something actually on the line, we just managed to fall short. We kept getting better if you look at the scores over time, but we just couldn't, you know, I don't have one world gold medal, like world championship gold medal. They're all silver. that Valentine's Day game in 1998 was the first time that we played Canada. And it's always physical. It can get nasty. It's two very competitive teams. And a lot of times we're really only playing for our pride. You know, there's no sort of pot of gold on the other side of that rainbow. So, but pride means a lot. And so those games can get pretty nasty. And, the short story is that, you know, after a period, I think we were scoreless. And then by a few minutes into the third period, they were up by 3 or 4 goals, maybe 4-1. And it was getting really chippy. And I think our coach was just worried that someone would get hurt, you know. And so he didn't want that because we knew we were playing in the gold medal game in a couple of days. So he called timeout and just kind of pulled us all in and gave us a chance to breathe and regroup and add some perspective to what was going on that particular day. There was no gold medal actually on the line, even though it might have seemed that way. And sure enough, I think that was with just under 12 minutes left in the third period. We're down by 4 against Canada, a team that we've struggled, you know, to beat always. And we ended up scoring, I think, 6 unanswered goals in the last 12 minutes of that game to come back and win that game. So while it didn't mean anything in the standing, so to speak, it certainly meant a lot to us psychologically to know that pretty much no matter what happened, you know, throughout the game of that gold medal match, there was always a chance that we'd be able to come out on top.
Goosebumps. I just got goosebumps you telling that story. It's a cool story. I was watching the women's match the other night, the women's game the other night, and your teammate, AJ Malesko, was calling that, and she recalled a very brief snippet of it, but that's a great, tremendous story. So you end up going to play them in the gold medal match just really a few days later, right? Because there was only six teams at the time, so the round robin was sort of, you go through it, you both finished at the top of the standings, and then you knew you were playing a few days later. And then, obviously, what happens in the gold medal game?
Yeah, so it was everything you kind of expected to be. It was still a very close game, but all these are my personal perspectives. My personal, recollection was really just being very, very light in the locker room prior to that game, where I think that in the past, at least me, the way, I would kind of get amped up and a little bit nervous and try to get really
intense,
like focused. Yeah. And intense. And for, whether it was that victory that we had a couple of days before, or just the overall saying, like, throwing all the cards on the table, like, this is it. You might as well just have fun. I'm not quite sure, what got into me, but my observation of the locker room as a whole, and certainly the way that I felt personally, was really relaxed, going out there onto the ice. And I just remember, smiling during warmups, which I just never do or did, and just, really enjoying that moment. And sure enough, it was still a battle. It was a 3-1 final with an empty net goal. But I don't think we ever felt like we weren't going to win that game.
Interesting. So obviously the match that you had just a few days before probably helped you to loosen up and allow mm-hmm. you to be a little bit lighter for that gold medal game. So, it's been a while. You're the last gold medalist in women's ice hockey from the U.S. There's been some heartbreaking moments, including the other day, another close game with Canada. You feel like they have an opportunity to overcome this now? I mean, it's each of these games, these heartbreakers, has been tight. It's not like they're getting blown off the ice.
No, absolutely. I mean, they've got a strong team. And do I think they can do it? Absolutely, 100%. I've seen them, at their best. That was a tough – I mean, they took over 40 shots and scored, like, once. So, right there, it's just a matter of breaking that ice, I think. You run into hot goaltenders. I mean, there's so many great goaltenders in the tournament. You've got to get creative in the way, that you approach trying to score goals. It's not always going to be a big blast from the outside. With some of these goalies, it's going to be kind of a dirty goal that just kind of bounces in front of them and they can't get a handle on, and you just got some manage to get a stick on it. So I certainly think that they have the grit, the skill, everything they need to win that game. I hope that they relax. I hope that they have fun, because, having watched them so many times, they're certainly better when they're having fun.
Right.
So, and not putting like the weight of the world, I know that they've made, some bold statements throughout the year. And that's good. Like, you gotta, famous people have done that and done really well. Muhammad Ali, right? He wasn't really shy about making bold
sure.
statements. And I think that's good, if it motivates you and puts you in the right, state of mind. But I do think that, I hope that they relax. I hope that they play and have fun. And then just try to get creative, maybe in front of that Canadian goaltender. Of course, they have to get through Finland. I'm assuming it's going to be Finland.
Right.
I could be wrong. That's not set yet. But if I had to guess, they're going to have to get through Finland first. And their goaltender is outstanding. So, we might be getting a step ahead of ourselves talking
sure.
about Canada. But I think that, they certainly have the roster.
Right.
They certainly have the roster. They certainly have the goaltending.
Good insight. Thank you. So,
yeah.
So you get the gold medal. Closing ceremonies comes, as you said, it was a little bit of a party. You got to go on Letterman.
Yeah.
You got to do a little bit of a press junket. That had to be a unique experience for a lot of people. I obviously had microphones in your face before that, but now you're on the cover of magazines and newspapers, and you're on Letterman and the whole thing. So that had to be a whirlwind.
Yeah, it really was. It was a lot of fun. And I think that, the thing with team sports is like, I love like always being like the center of attention. Like, I love being part of something that's unique and fantastic and successful. But we had our superstars. We had our captain. We had Cammy Granato. That led the way. So a lot of those commitments that were made after we had won had to be fulfilled by her and some other players. And
sure.
We got to go to Hawaii. So
not bad.
It wasn't bad at all. For me, it was a lot of fun. It was nerve-wracking. Like, you're getting ready to read the card from Letterman, and you've never done that before. And so it was, yeah. But it was a lot of fun, and just a really great group of athletes, a great group of women. And,
do you get a chance to keep in touch with those teammates still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're all in touch. And it's, apparently I need to get an iPhone because I'm on Android and the text messaging, I always get dropped. I always get dropped off the group text.
You get bumped off to a separate text. I get it. I'm there.
Yeah. So, but then we are, we're very much in touch. And in fact, I actually work right now, Angelo Ruggiero, who was our youngest player at the time, who of course went on to have many, many more Olympic experiences and a ton of experience with the, International Olympic Committee. She's still involved in it. She's in South Korea right now. And she actually started, a company, an innovation lab, so to speak. And the company that I work for works there. So once she gets back from the Olympics, I'll be seeing Angela, pretty much daily, which will be kind of fun.
That's great. That was my next question. What are you doing with yourself today?
Yeah. So, since the Olympics, I kind of fell into high tech early. I got an internship after I got out of the game and support, and I really liked it at a startup. And I really liked that, that environment. Maybe it parallels a small team in many ways. The things, that you have to do and the different hats that you have to wear and, being accountable to your teammates for getting stuff done. Lots of that I like. And, I currently, work for, a platform that's hoping to, bring some sanity to all the sports tech that's out there now and sort of centralize it in a platform so that programs, can consolidate a little bit. So they use different applications for scheduling and for registering and for communicating with their teams and coaches. And there's like a ton of point solutions out there. So, what Driven is trying to do is kind of consolidate all that. So, people can pick and choose the tools that they like the most and then consolidate a lot of the communications and scheduling and even wellness, performance type information inside
That's
of
great.
One platform. So,
That's great. What's
yeah.
the name
so
of the company again?
It's called Driven, D-R-I-V-N. We dropped the E because we're a cool, hip tech company.
Yeah, of course you got to do that. So, well done. So, rapid fire, where do you keep the gold medal?
Different places. It's at home. It's right here.
Look at that.
My kids had it at school last Friday.
I
so
love
it's
it.
Right here.
Yeah, let's see it. Look at that thing.
There you go.
They don't give those out just anywhere. You got to earn that thing.
Yeah, no. I like to keep it handy because some people have it. I think some of my teammates have it in a safe deposit box. But people want to see it when they come by. So
good stuff. Well. Uh-huh. I do appreciate it. It was great to talk to you again. It's my friend Colleen Coyne, the 1998 women's ice hockey gold medalist in Nagano, Japan. Thanks for sharing some time with us. I'll talk to you again soon.
That's the school bus. All right. Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thanks. That was Colleen Coyne, 1998 Olympic gold medalist in women's ice hockey. I'm Mike Blewett from the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
So there you go. That was my interview with my friend Colleen Coyne. Hopefully you got some insight as to what it's like to be an Olympian. What'd you think, Kev?
Absolutely loved it. I love that she keeps the gold medal handy. She's like, people want to see it.
Yeah.
So I keep it handy. I think that's a good question.
She surprised me with that.
I don't know where I would keep my Olympic medal. Because now I feel like I would just, for the first year, I think I'd wear it straight. Like I would not take it off.
The problem is, if you are a young man, you are a young man currently.
Right.
I'm just saying back in the day, when I was Colleen's friend, if she had been wearing the thing out, you know that after like many beers, I'd be like, let me wear it. And then it gets lost on the tee in Boston. And then I'm that guy. So,
who lost her medal?
That's the problem.
And then she would have never done that interview there.
She didn't. I'm saying, had I done that when I was younger, I would have been an idiot and probably lost it or something. But yeah, I'm sure it has its advantages when you're a younger person. So it always has its advantages. But yeah, she surprised me with that. I didn't know. We did the pre-interview. And I asked a whole bunch of questions, and I didn't ask that one. So it was a surprise to have when she had it on hand. I didn't tell her to have it. It was a total surprise to me. So very cool. You can catch that thing on YouTube. I'll actually tweet it out a little bit later in the show so you get a sense. But it was we did that interview last week in the run-up to the women's game on Wednesday night, I guess it was, Thursday Korea time. So the women's hockey team obviously beat Canada. That was the first time we had won the gold since 1998, the team that Colleen was on. obviously a very exciting game. Everybody knows now there was a huge shootout. Jocelyn Lamoureux with the oops, I did it again move and had the Canadian goalie flailing and missing. We won in the sixth inning, as it's called. But nice job by Matty Rooney.
That's where
Matty
Captain Cazzadori comes in for the terms.
And Captain Cazzadori will come in. So I got to ask you first, what did you think of the game? And then I'll get your thoughts on the shootout.
First of all, it's rounds. It's not innings.
Rounds. I read an article. That I had read an article the other day that called it innings. And it was a surprise to me. So I repeated that. Aaron. I would also, as a side note, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned Katie Couric talking about Netherlands being good at ice skating because the canals freeze over. And I said I was stunned by that. You know why I was stunned? Because it's not true.
You have to
some idiot researcher at NBC. I keep reading these things. You can't believe everything you read and hear on the internet. And anyway, rounds. I apologize. In the sixth round, I believe we won. Matty Rooney stopped the shot. Is that right?
Yes.
And then Jocelyn Lamoureux had the goal. But sick move by Jocelyn Lamoureux. Game obviously was super exciting, right?
Absolutely super exciting. That deke and dangle that Lamoureux had at the end of the game in the shootout was fantastic, opening up that blade, really faking out that Canadian goalie. Just really quick on my thoughts on the shootout for an Olympic gold medal game. I can understand why people are upset that there is a shootout. It's one-on-one versus a goalie. Not even in the Stanley Cup playoffs do they have shootouts. They're using IIHF rules, which is the World Juniors use that and everything like that. So to me, I'm not upset that they won a shootout. That's the rules. They won fair and square. But I can understand why you wouldn't want a shootout in a high-pressure situation like that, because it's not really a team sport at that point. It's a one-on-one.
Yeah, and how about a hockey guy saying that it shouldn't have counted because she didn't skate forward?
No, absolutely not. She was still going forward. She made a couple turns. I know it kind of looked like she was going to the side a little bit, but I'm sure if there was a view from behind her, you would see she was still moving forward. I think the camera angle was a little deceiving there. I think she was still
Is it that the puck has to be moving forward, or the player can also not be moving? What if the puck's moving forward the whole time?
That's a good question. I think it has to be both.
You can answer it. Yeah. Okay. Well, that was the end of the first hour. Cool interview. We'll come back. We're going to talk some NFL. We might squeeze a little bit more Olympics. By the way, college basketball is about to come to an end in a fiery ball of collusion and illegal activity. Talk about that after the break. Join us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.